And I remember being like, oh no, like it's not, this was my only shot.
Right.
And then the three of us, so Marco, a physio from the center, and Victor Troicki, were sort of teasing me. We're like, oh, too bad, Judy, too bad you're not playing with him. And then they said, all done, let us have a reunion, a meeting to decide whether or not we can change that. So the three of them, Novak was sat on his chair.
Just playing with your heart.
They were completely playing. And then they turned around and they were like, no, no. You know, in French, the no, no.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I remember looking at Novak being like, I was like, in my head, I was like, you're not going to do that,
like,
are you?
I've got the tennis shoes. But wait, look, I brought the shoes.
You're listening to Bored with Nelly.
Welcome to another edition of the Bored with Nelly podcast. Today I'm joined by Julie. She is a teacher, I believe. English teacher?
I am a French teacher.
French teacher. Okay, cool. And a big Nola fan. There's a lot of things I want to talk to you about. You're not a typical guest for me because that's how I can't really research you too much. I can't really go in depth. So I got to go into this dry, not knowing anything about you and ask you a little bit about yourself.
Sure. Well, my name is Julie. I'm 32. I'm originally French, but I also have the British nationality now. And I'm based in London, but my whole family lives in France. And I've been a Novak fan since 2006, when I discovered him on French TV during the French Open. And yeah, I think that's all you need to know for now. I'm sure we'll come out to more details later.
Okay, before the Nola love, let's talk about a little bit about yourself. You know, what do you do? A little bit more about your life, I guess.
Well, I'm a teacher in London. It's been 12 years now. I've been in the UK. Teaching has always been my thing. I've been doing loads of tutoring since I've been a teenager. And for my hobbies, well, I would say tennis and music are my two things, listening to music and going to concerts. That was the first thing actually where I spent my money on to. When I started having jobs, I went to concerts for my favorite band in the UK. And that's how I think I also fell in love with the UK. Sorry, because as I said, I'm originally from France. And that's what made me move there as well. And tennis, I had a love of tennis since I was a little girl, because of the French Open, because in France, you know, when it's the French Open, you see it everywhere on TV. And then for personal reasons, I sort of stepped away from tennis when I was like 11. And then discovering Novak actually made me come back to tennis. And it is my favorite sport. And, you know.
Reunite your love for tennis?
Absolutely. And I think that's also why, you know, I love Novak so much, is because that my support to him brought me back that love of my favorite sport. And I think it's just much more than just liking Novak as a player. It's just also very personal and very, you know, about me, you know.
Sure. Where does the love for teaching come from? What's that about? Is that a tough question? Has no one asked you this?
No, I've never really... oops, sorry. My phone is blowing.
You're good.
Well, my mum has always wanted to be a teacher, but she never became one. And I don't know if that has a link. I don't know. I found it very rewarding, you know, because, and I like having a relationship with people, etc. How it started, I don't know. It was just natural to me since a very young age. I've said I'll be a teacher. Before that, I wanted to be a singer, you know, when you're a little girl, you're like, oh, I sing, you know, and I do love singing, but I don't know. It's literally a vocation. Is that vocational? Is that how you say it in English? I think it is. It's just something very natural to me. Teaching is my thing.
Yeah.
You know?
So I describe this podcast as a career podcast, but in reality, it's just me inviting people I want to talk to. Sometimes that's the hook to bring them on. So I'm always curious, where does that love for something stem from? If it can be rooted somewhere deeper. And it's tough. It's a tough question sometimes.
A teacher when I was a very young one who was amazing. He was a diamond, really. And I think, I don't know, he, I feel like he, how could I say this? He gave me roots for life. And I feel like my respect and admiration and love for him also made me want to become like him.
Sure.
Because he's passed away, unfortunately, very young. And I think, yeah, it's a way as well. I think, yeah, there are lots of different reasons. But I think like when I started tutoring at 14.
Wow, really?
And yeah. In my own school, I was starting giving like French lessons to kids in primary school. It's just been my thing. I just love doing it, you know.
And
it's demanding.
I imagine.
It's rewarding.
How did you learn English then?
Well, in school, but my love for a favorite band that I have, that is a British band, I remember like literally starting going on the internet in 2005. I was 15 and just finding any possible interview. So we didn't have the internet at home in 2003-04. And I remember discovering 2003 and going to a place in my town during my free time, during the holidays, and finding any possible interview, printing them. And then I had little books where I was trying to translate them. I had my massive dictionary at home.
That's passion.
And I was trying to translate. Yeah. Yeah. I wanted to learn English because I've told myself from quite a young age, as soon as I discovered that band, I said, one day I'll go and I'll meet them and I'll go and see them in concert and I will meet them in person. I will tell them thank you for, you know, and I did. When
oh,
I was,
really?
20. Yeah.
What band is this? Do you mind me asking
No, it's called McFly. It's a British band. So they're not very known worldwide.
Marty McFly, like the Back to the Future?
They took the name from Back to the Future, yes. Yeah.
Clever.
But they're not worldwide known, but in the UK they had 7 number ones.
Right.
So, but years ago, I have to say now, they may be a little bit less popular, but they still have quite a core fan base of all people my age, you know, from quite around the world, actually.
Right.
So yeah, I used to translate the interviews, and I remember I had my little notebook as well, you know, where I had separated in 2 columns, the French and English, you know, I was writing every single new word. I had cut out so that I could do the A, B, C, D, E, F, G, you know, by alphabetical order. Like, I was quite, stationary wise, it was interesting.
That's dedication, because nowadays the kids have everything. Like, they have a billion apps, they have, tutors, they have so many resources.
It was literally what I was doing in my free time. I've never been much more of a party girl. When I was younger, I was not social either. Like, I didn't like talking to strangers. I found any social situation very awkward. I was very shy.
Wow.
Like, I was shy.
Right.
Like, now that would be like, people would laugh when I would say that. But it was my thing in my free time in the summer before I was able to have a small job. I was doing that in my free time, like, you know, the interviews. And in June it was watching the French Open though.
Right.
You know, as soon as you come back from school, it was putting the TV on and just watching the clay.
That's cool. I remember when I was a kid, I thought I would never need English. When I was 7 or 6, my mom tried to get me into English classes. I'm like, what? Why the hell would I need this? Like, I'm not gonna. And then we moved to Canada like a year later. I'm like, ugh, probably should have paid a little more attention in those English classes.
Yeah, it was for me languages. I find them fascinating.
Yes.
And like my brain loves to understand the why it works this way. And I'm a linguist, you know, that's just, once again, one of my things.
There's something that keeps your brain. I'm trying to learn. I've been learning Spanish for over 2 years now. So there's like a hidden dopamine rush when I get learn something new in a new language that I can't really get from other things. I don't know if you're the same.
Well, one of the best thing, like to challenge a brain at any age, okay, is to learn languages. Like, look, I've told myself the day I have kids, you know, when they're 2, 3, I'm gonna, because they're sponges, you know, that's the
of
best
course.
Age to literally teach them any language. And then I want to have bilingual kids, you know, for sure. Cause it's fascinating to see how you just switch languages like that.
Yeah. There's also like a lot of, I think there was a lot of studies about like the benefits of knowing multiple languages. And
Definitely.
So, you know, early childhood stuff, what were you kind of like as a kid? What did you enjoy doing besides tennis and stuff like that?
Oh dear. I'm listening to music. Ooh, sorry. My
I'm gonna make a compilation of all the times
I'm awesome. I'm gonna hold it.
It's all good.
Yeah, in the bloopers, you're gonna
In
be
the
like,
blooper reel,
boom.
yes.
What did I like doing? I don't know. I was a very introvert kid. Like, I was not into many things. I was just into listening music, singing. I used to sing quite a lot when I was a kid.
Traveling?
No.
Me neither.
No.
I hated traveling when I was a kid, but now I like that's all I want to do.
Yeah, but you know, when you're a kid, it doesn't depend on you, does it? You know?
No,
and,
it doesn't. Yeah, it's on your parents, right?
Yeah, I did go to a few places in France, but didn't really go abroad when I was a kid, just the borders, but that's it. And yeah, I can't say I was boring as a kid, but because, you know, we all have different
sure.
things and introvert people are not boring, but I can't really recall a part what I was doing. I don't know. I was writing. I still love writing a lot, making up my own stories, my own scenarios. I remember I had written a story of witches, like when I was 9, 10 years old, because I was inspired by, I don't know if you know the series Charmed.
Yeah, I've heard of it. Yeah.
And yeah, and I was very much into like having powers, you know.
Interesting.
Yeah, writing was also my thing. I did, well, actually, yes, writing was my thing. I used to write some poems when I was followed, like, because of that very inspirational teacher.
Right.
Which I still have somewhere in a box somewhere here.
Right.
But yeah, writing was my thing. I already liked taking photos because I remember begging my mum to have, you know, the disposable ones, because back then it was
right.
what was the most affordable. Yeah.
Very artsy and things. Looking at it, it's very artsy things, you know?
I hated drawing, though.
Oh.
Like, I remember my teacher
That's where you draw
having,
the hard line.
Yeah. I remember my teacher having to literally, and it was, I remember being in my report, being like, I'm struggling to get Judy to draw. Like, she refuses to.
Right.
I was already rebellious.
Right.
Stubborn. Here's what I was
Stubborn.
When I was a kid.
That's
Stubborn.
What I was, too. Yes. So, my name is Nenad, and in Serbian, mm-hmm. ne means no.
Yeah.
And for the first, like, 10 years of my life, like, anything that my parents would ask me, it would always be, nah, nah. Like,
nah.
Do you want to go to Greece? Nah. Do you want to, like, do something? Nah. Like, it would be, do you want to eat? No. Like, it would always, and that nickname hung until, like, my early teens, and then eventually, Anneli, kind of, in Canada, I became Canadianized, and then,
okay.
Yeah.
Fair
so,
enough.
Where does the, okay, let's, you said 2006 is the love for Nola.
Yeah.
And you saw him on TV French Open. I'm trying to think how old he was. He was a teenager, right?
He was 19.
He's 19. Wow.
Yeah. He had just turned 19. And actually, you know sometimes how in life you've got very vivid memories.
Yeah.
And I have this very vivid memory. Like, literally, I could describe to you the living room of my mum's house back then. And like, I remember my mum had loads of plants next to the TV and, you know, where the TV was.
Right.
But I remember that because, if I'm not mistaken, Nadal won the French Open in 2005. And there was
Probably.
Obviously...
He's won every one of the, yeah. the last 20 years.
I mean, for the first time.
For the first time,
and,
yes.
I think so. And there was a lot of hype around him. And I remember, you know... And actually, it was the summer because I was 1 year early in my studies. So I was revising for the French exam, because in France, you take the French exam at 17 years old.
Okay.
But I was 1 year early in my studies, so I was 16.
Gotcha.
And I remember the commentators. The first thing I remember is turning my head and seeing this guy with a French jersey, wearing
ah,
a
yes,
French jersey.
Yes, that famous interview where he talks about Nadal.
That's the one.
Yes.
That's the one. And me, I was not very following the hype. I never had a favorite player before that. I liked Guga because of his hair, and it reminded me of me, you know,
okay.
and my curly hair. And I didn't have a lot of people around me
right.
with curly hair. I'm the only one in my family, even
sure.
you know, my parents don't have curly hair. My siblings don't have curly hair anyway. And, you know, I remember just rooting for mostly usually the French guy when I was watching a
sure.
match, but nothing... as, you know, like passion, you know? And I remember for Nadal, not really following the hype. I had nothing against him, but I was just not like, meh.
Right.
And I remember the commentators making fun of Novak about this comment where, you know, if I may put things in context, where Novak was saying, so Novak had withdrawn against him after being two sets down.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So Novak was really losing that match. And then
right.
he retired. And Novak said he's not unbeatable about Nadal. He said, today I saw, you know, basically like holes in his game and he's not unbeatable. And I remember the commentators making fun of him, being like, well, that's presumptuous because, you know, you withdrew, like, you know, being two sets down. And I remember being like, I like this. I like the ambition.
Yes.
You know, I was like, yeah, oh, I like.
He's mixing it up.
Borderline arrogance.
Yes.
But I liked it. Right. You know, I was just like, ooh. And then I remember going to the computer and typing this name, you know, Novak Djokovic, and starting having a look. And that's how it started, you know.
Did he already, was he already doing those impression videos, impersonations? Or is that?
Yeah.
Yeah, is that what? Yeah.
It's well, I mean, it got bigger a little bit afterwards.
Sharapova,
when, you know,
Nadal.
Yeah. All of that. Yeah. I did like it back then. But like, if he were to do it now, I'd be like, I think, you know.
Yeah, I feel like when he was younger, he was probably just looking for something to kind of distinguish himself, or, you know, kind of to fit in. And he's always seen as this kind of funny guy. No?
I'm not sure if he wanted to distinguish himself. I think Novak is just a funny guy overall.
He is, yeah. But he was like over the top. Like, well, not over the, for his, he was young. He was at his age. He was like a performer.
Exactly.
Like more now. Now he's more relaxed and much more, you know, it's a little different.
And I think came a point where he was like, okay, that's enough. Like, I want the results now. That's all I want.
Right.
And that's when he was, he's also said that apparently some people used to be offended by it. So
yeah, there was a lot of that drama. I remember in the early days. I don't know. People couldn't take a joke then. So the other thing I wanted to ask you was then, when was the first game you went to see him live after that, 2006?
2016.
Wow. It took 10 years?
Because, simply for a question of money. Didn't have the money to go before, because I was going mostly for concerts and for my favorite bands, because they appeared before Novak, so they sort of have the priority.
Sure.
And when I went to the UK for the first years, I just didn't have money at all. Like, you know, when I did my degree to become a teacher, that was a very tough year financially. And then after that, when I started working, you know, it was my rent, my bills, and going back home. That's what I had money for. And in 2016, I was just like, okay, I need to finally go and watch him. And so I went to the ATP Masters in London, because he was still in London. And, you know, as you know, I've been living in London for the last 10 years.
Right.
And I had no idea, absolutely no idea how schedule worked, how, you know, like I never thought about it, because I never had to look into it. So I just took one evening where I found a pretty decent seat at a pretty decent price. And turns out that Novak was playing that evening.
Really?
It was a Tuesday evening against Miloš Raonic.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, you will know him.
I do know Miloš Raonic, yeah.
And it's still up to now, because, you know, I'm super lucky. But when Novak enters the court, I have these sort of butterflies in my stomach and where I could cry of happiness. Like, the emotions completely overwhelm me when he enters the court. It's just... And I remember that evening behind me, I had a couple, a British couple, and I think they could feel my excitement. And they were, you know, they were like, oh, you like him? I said, he's my favorite player. Like, I've been waiting for so long to see him. So then they tried to take a photo with me. So at the end of the changeover, when Novak came on our side of the court, because I was on the right of the umpire.
Right.
I remember he was like, oh, try and, you know, turn around so that, because they were behind me, try and turn around so that I can take a photo with you. Of course, the photo was going to be rubbish.
Sure.
But I remember he took a photo, but Novak bent down to do his shoelace. So my first photo of Novak is literally my face taking most of the picture.
Yeah.
And then behind, in the back, you've got Novak bending. So you see his bum. So that's the first picture I ever have. Like, I said the other day to someone that I should take it out. Like, I should post that picture and just to show it to people. And it's in one of my external hard drive. I need to go and find it.
That's so funny.
You know, that is quite funny. And then I remember buying, I think the addiction started of going to tennis matches. Like, I saw him and I was just like, we're not stopping there. So then I bought another ticket on Viagogo for the semifinal. And semifinal, I was row B. Like, I established where was the place to be. So it was, you know, on the left-hand side of the umpire, because that's where he left.
Sure.
And, you know, trying to text the closest. And I brought the Serbian flag. That I bought on site. And I was like, that's it. We need to represent, you know?
Right.
And that's when it started, yeah.
Does he remember that? Was he like, did he see you that
No.
day? No, of course not.
No, no, no.
2016, wow.
I'm gonna be honest, I was a bit scared of meeting Novak, because Novak has so much charisma. And
Sure.
if you take the Novak just on court, without watching the interviews, without watching everything else, without social media, Novak can be, and I'm gonna put this in between brackets, but a little bit scary, you know, because he can get very angry at himself, at his box, you know.
Yes.
And I don't mind that at all. It's a lot of passion, and actually that's also why I love him so much. But it, you know, for me back then, I was a little bit like, you know, ooh, I, you know,
Right.
never meet your idols. That's what they say, right?
Right, right.
So I was like, And actually, at the end of that week, I met him for the first time, and he did something that made me change my mind completely, as in being scared. I was just like, okay, I'm not
Right.
scared of this guy. He's amazing, and from now on, I'm gonna, you know, like, sort of dedicate myself to him. And that's also a time when my favorite band was sort of on a hiatus. So all that money that I usually spend at the
Why write the
concerts,
no Novak's
I could,
games? That's cool.
it really did. And
Right.
that's when I think my attention shifted in a way, you know, went
Right.
from one to the other. The band is still my favorite band, and you know, I went to see them in concert, I don't know, last May, I think, and then I'm going to see them in September again.
Right.
But once again, here now I'm 32, I'm not 24 anymore, and
Sure.
you know, the money is not the same. So they're still, you know, because And I want to insist on that, because I receive so many messages and sometimes so many digs at how are you doing this, like financially? And people think I'm a millionaire, or that Novak pays everything for me. Like
Right.
someone said to me a few days ago, Novak's paying for your flight. I was like, what? No, he's not. But it's just a lot of saving money, calculations. Yeah, it's a lot of that. But yeah, I did meet him for the first time in November 2016. Actually, the evening he lost against Murray. So I saw him play for the semi-final. And then the final, I didn't go. I just watched the match at home. And then I met him. And yeah,
What was that
that.
like? Yeah, what was meeting Novak like?
Well, first of all, I was not, as I told you, I was scared. And I met him at his hotel. That's the first time and only time ever that I've met Novak in a sort of private space, because for me, usually hotels are a boundary where I
Sure.
wouldn't go. But I had no idea how to meet this guy. Like the O2 is massive. Clearly, I had gone around Wimbledon, even though I had not been able to go inside the premises. I was like, there's no way to meet him, you know?
Sure.
So when you go, well, back then, now it's a bit different, but in 2016, when you went on the tag, you could see loads of posts. And three different people had posted photos with Novak, and two of them in the lobby of the hotel, and one of them in the park next to the hotel. So I was like, okay, that must be the hotel. So I went there. I arrived at 9 p.m. Okay. And I was like, okay, surely he's going to come by car. And I remember, like,
You're setting
there
a really
was.
good scene, by the way. This is good. I found him on Instagram. The tags were
Because.
there. I came at 9 o'clock.
Yeah, because it's so vivid for me. You know, it's the first time I met him. I wouldn't be able to give you that much details of timings for all the many times I met him, but that first time was so because also I was telling everything to my friend, and my friend played a huge part in me not leaving. Because I had said to myself, 1 hour. Like it was raining as well. And you know, it was a very chic area. So I was staying absolutely not in front of the hotel entrance, but I would say 50 meters down. And I was under, like, it was a jewelry store, very, you know, luxury jewelry store. And they had a little sort of thing that was covering the window. So I was putting myself under it so that I was not under the rain.
Sure.
But there were cars, and I timed it. I remember timing it. There were cars arriving every 30 seconds, black cars arriving every 30 seconds. So it's dark, it's raining, black cars arriving every 30
Wow.
seconds. And then I remember being like, okay, maybe he's going to take another entrance. You know, he's so big. Like, you know, for me, Novak is like God, you know? So I'm like, And then I was like, oh, he's lost against Murray. Maybe I'm going to bother him. Maybe he doesn't want to stop. Maybe,
Right, yeah.
you know,
Catch him
I
in a
came up
bad
with a
mood or
lot of things.
something, right? Yeah.
Exactly, you know, and he's just lost. It's Sunday evening, you know? And I remember at 10 saying to my friend, okay, I think he's gone another way. Because, you know, I had calculated with, looked on Google, how long it takes from the O2 to that
This
hotel,
could have
you
been a
know?
very different Netflix documentary interview, like.
Well, it's funny because my friends said to me, my colleagues actually also said to me that Netflix should do a documentary of me being a fan, you
Yeah,
know.
that'd be funny. I'd watch that. We start with the story though. The 10 o'clock, dark, yeah. you're finding him on Instagram,
yeah.
black cars.
And my friend said, stay 5 more minutes. She was like, come on, don't give up. Because that friend, I met her through the other band where we waited for them in places as well, sometimes for a long time. And she was like, rule number one, don't leave your spot. So I didn't leave my spot. And then literally like an angel amongst all the black cars in the darkness, there's a white car that arrives. And I spot Yelena.
Oh, nice.
And then literally, I don't know how to explain, my body just went, oh. That's it, he's in that car. You know, I was like, he's here. So he was in there.
Right.
And there was also, what's his name? There was the president of the ATP back then. I forgot his name suddenly. The ex-president now, because now it's a different one.
Right.
But who was in there. And there was the chauffeur. They opened the boot. And I remember being like, okay, what do I do? So I started getting closer. And I said, hey, Novak, but quiet like this. You know, even though it was not just close
right.
to me. Didn't react. And then he was walking in. Yelena had already walked in. And of course, I was not going into the lobby, like
right.
too much for me. And I said, hi, Novak, like louder. And he turned towards me and he was like, yeah. And in my head, I went, oh, I'm annoying him. Like, I was like, I'm annoying him. That's
oh,
it.
No.
I've ruined it before, you know, even like, I was like, oh my gosh, this is the end.
Right.
And then when I'm nervous, I can talk a lot and quite fast. So I went, hi Novak, I'm really sorry you lost tonight, but for me, you're my favorite one. It's been 10 years I've been supporting you. Now, for me, you're the best. I love you so much. And he laughed.
Right.
He laughed. And then he did something, you know, I told you earlier on that wasn't me,
yeah.
for me, was the sign I've chosen the right one. He took off his cap and he shook my hand. So he took off his cap to shake my hand. And in France, it's a huge sign of respect when you do that.
Right.
So I went, okay. I was like, hi. You know, like, okay. And in my head, I was just like, oh, okay, I'm not annoying him. We're good. We're good. We're good. So we took a photo. And in my foot, like in the photo, like, I think literally you can see the stars and the hearts in my eyes.
Is it on your Instagram? Is it like on the very bottom or something? Like at the very
I
beginning?
Don't think I posted
oh,
the
no?
first photo ever.
Oh,
no.
Okay. All right.
I don't think I've posted it. I could send it to you afterwards.
Yeah, I
it's in
see
my
it.
Phone.
Please.
It's in my phone. But yeah, it's the, yeah.
That's so
like even talking about it, I'm just like,
you
you're like
back
an
at
idiot.
It.
Yeah, it's just you know, it was awesome. But he's awesome. Like really, he's the best one.
Oh, that's great.
And
so, yeah.
And I think that first meeting was like, okay, this guy deserves my support,
right.
and I'm gonna step up. But what really made me step up is the fact he got injured in 2017. Because in 2017,
yes.
I wanted to go and see him more. And in 2017, I booked to go to New York for the first time. So it was the first time I was getting out of Europe traveling solo. I had traveled solo in Europe, but not outside Europe.
Right.
And I was like, okay, I'm going to go to New York for the first time, mostly being a tourist. And I'll go to the US Open for the first 2 days. Because, of course, for me, I need to be in work at work the 1st of September.
Sure.
And as we all know, Novak retired at Wimbledon and then decided not to play for the next 6 months.
Right.
And I remember just being heartbroken, just being like, oh my gosh, if there's no Novak, like, you know, what's going on? And then I discovered, I still went, of course, but I discovered practice week when the US Open, they open for free the week before, usually. And I was like, next year, like, I have to come back for when Novak, you know, will be there. And because I was really ready second half of 2017 to already go more, you
right,
know.
Right.
I did watch him play in Roland Garros 2017, of course, because Roland Garros is always easier for me because it's closer.
Sure. Also,
and Wimbledon,
it's cheap compared to the other ones, I think. It's a lot cheaper from what I've checked, no?
Similar to Wimbledon, I would say, to see Novak play on big courts.
Yes.
US Open is always so expensive. And Australian Open, I haven't gone yet.
Okay.
So I don't know about prices.
Yeah.
But and I was ready in 2017 to start this. But then the fact he was out, 2018 was the one I was like, now we're literally saving every penny that we can. And we're doing this. So 2018, I started. 2019 was the year I went to 9 tournaments in
Whoa.
A year.
When he starts seeing you at every tournament, he's like, oh, okay, this is a legit hardcore fantasy. I've seen.
No.
No?
I warned him before. I warned him.
Oh, did
Literally,
you?
Queens 2018. we had met a couple of times, but I don't think he was putting a face to a name yet. And in 2018, when he played at Queen's last minute, and Queen's, of course, is in London, there was a free practicing weekend. And I went in and I found out where was the place to wait for him after practice. And I gave him a card, because I had written a card for him to basically tell him how much I admired him. And I said to him, right, Novak, I said, can you remember my face and my hair? Because I said, now you're going to see me everywhere. Like, I'm going to go out of my way to support you in person.
He's terrified. He's like, oh my God. Oh no.
No, don't say that, because then you're making me look like a groupie. Please don't say that. You have no idea how many times I heard that.
Just kidding.
And that's not his case at all.
No, of course
and
not.
Then actually 2 months later in New York, he did a Laver Cup press conference in 2018.
Right.
And my friend texted me. I was on my way to the US Open. And I had, luckily, like, you know, sometimes the stars are aligned. I got the Wi-Fi in a tube station. And she told me. So I went back because he was actually just next to my hotel in the morning. And I had no idea. He was doing the two-day show. So I was gutted to miss that. And then she told me about the Laver Cup press conference. And I remember, once again, like the stars, you know, like I arrived at the address she gave me and it was just massive buildings everywhere. Like literally, I had no idea. It was just doors everywhere, etc. And then I saw something reflect in the sun and there was a guy, you know, with the A3 pictures that a guy wants to have them sign and then resell them.
Yes, yes, yes.
That reflected in the sun and he was waiting at the right door. Novak was inside during the press conference. And, you know, he was looking like during the press conference. And he saw me outside and he just went like this. And I was like, okay, is he going to take that door? That door was the door where he had his car. He came out, he was signing to loads of people. And then he was like, hey, Julie, how are you? So 2 months after he recognized me, that worked.
Wow. That's awesome. That's really great.
Mm. And that's since then that he knows very well who I am.
Yeah. He looks out every time. Oh, there she is. Okay, cool. Got some... He needs some support because he usually doesn't get a lot of support at a lot of these events, or at least the past couple of years. Or is that the narrative of the media?
It is.
Is it? Yeah.
It is. I mean, there are, we can't lie. There are some crowds that are awful to him. But I also believe that they believe what they read in the media.
Sure.
You know, I actually bumped into a guy the other day in Wimbledon. We were waiting at the end of practice and that guy said to me, oh, yeah, I don't like Novak Djokovic because, you know, he's promoting anti-vax stuff. And I said, excuse me, what? I said, please tell me where you saw Novak saying I am against vaccines and I am urging people not to get vaccinated.
Yeah.
And he was like, oh, I said, it doesn't exist.
Right.
So I said, but you see, this is a kind of thing. And I believe some of the media are very well to blame about this.
Of course.
You know, actually, just before doing this with you, I was already... correcting people on Twitter who again are saying that he tried to enter Australia illegally. It's
oh my
not
God,
true.
They still haven't let that go.
It's not true. Like it was legal. So
right.
Can we? But you know all these narratives, and I think for the average tennis people, you know, if they read the big media, they're gonna believe these things. Like literally,
sure.
The BBC at some point said that he forced his way into Australia. That is not true. But imagine the BBC saying that. So someone, you know, who's, you know, an average tennis fan who just reads the news is going to be like, well, if the BBC says it, then it's true.
Right. And it's not just them. So, it's a collection of these other outlets doing it. So that's when you're
definitely.
Yeah. So they're like,
definitely.
Oh my God, everyone's saying it. So it must be true. Like,
exactly.
A terrible approach.
I don't know if you remember like a year ago when he was at the Olympics and there was a question about dealing with pressure.
Right.
And the guy at the beginning of the question, the journalist, said, oh, you know, Simon Biles has said about dealing with pressure. And he said, what about you? You've won the first three slams. You're running for the gold calendar slam. You know, how do you deal with pressure? And then he said, oh, for me, pressure is a privilege, you know. But he never, ever mentioned Simon Biles. He never criticized him.
I remember that. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That was
and
such
then
a terrible
one
spin.
Big French journal said, oh, he's saying to Simon Biles, pressure is a privilege. And then all the people, like, it went into a massive scandal. And even the journalist who asked the question did say he never talked about Simon Biles.
Yes.
It was too late. It was too late.
Yes.
And this is where sometimes the media make mistakes that you're just like, how can you? How can you? You know, I don't know.
Well, that's
just...
why that's a whole nother topic. That's why they're losing a lot of trust and you know. They're their own downfall, essentially. So, you know, all those things work out. So, okay, you went to a bunch of different games, and I actually don't know if my Zoom's going to run out, so if at some point I disappear,
sure,
we'll just restart it. So, yeah, you went to a bunch of different games. What's your, like, favorite event, match, trophy that you've gone to? Because I'm sure that you get asked that a lot.
Oof. Can I say the next one that I haven't gone to yet?
Okay.
No, I mean, I have to say, but maybe it's because I don't have any perspective, but this Wimbledon just now felt very special.
This Wimbledon, okay.
I think Novak and Novak fans needed it, you know?
Yeah,
after everything that, you know, we've gone through, I mean, I've been super lucky. You know, sometimes I'm not always at trophy because I can't go the full weeks, etc. In terms of what are my favorite tournaments to go to as a fan, I think Monte Carlo is my top one so far.
Can't blame you. Nice scenery.
Yeah, and it's just so easy to meet players, and
right.
And the tickets are quite affordable as well, to be honest. Even though you might be right at the top, you know, it's you know.
They're all good views. Monte Carlo, I've seen the courts, like the views are unbelievable.
And you can see the practices of every single player.
Right.
Whilst there are some tournaments where the practices are hidden and you can't really meet them either, or you can't even approach them, which I think is a shame. You know,
right.
I think as a fan, I tend to rate tournaments according to whether or not it's easy to meet the players.
Fan accessibility or something, right?
Yeah. US Open and the practice week are pretty good for that as well, to be honest. After that, it's more complicated during the actual tournament, especially for the big players.
Right.
But the practice week is you know, it's all free. Like, you can come in every day. There's the schedule of where they practice and when,
wow,
what time. And you don't pay a penny to go in.
That's
like,
cool.
It's amazing. It's amazing. But yeah, this Wimbledon was quite special. I'm trying to think last year as well, Wimbledon last year, because Novak was at 19 and won Wimbledon and got to 20. So it was 20-20-20.
Right.
Quite a special one as well. I was around for Wimbledon 2019, but I was on the hill.
Okay.
Which was particular because I was surrounded by Roger Federer fans.
Of course.
Most of them starting to get really drunk because it had been 5 hours.
Okay, fair.
And I don't drink, so my level was not as same as them. But the joy afterwards was just from another world for
yes.
us, Novak
Two
fans.
Two match points yeah. down, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I remember.
A lot of tears in the crowd that day, probably.
Of joy for us.
Of joy for you, but yeah.
I remember thinking, because I was with a few other Novak fans, and I was remember thinking, what is the shortest way for me to leave, and without being rude, but just to avoid people when Novak was, you know, 40-15. Well, Roger was at 40-15.
Right.
Well, luckily, I didn't have to do that. But yeah, I do like going. Like, I've seen him win the Paris Masters a couple of times now as well, which is quite special, you know.
Sure.
You know, it is in France, and when it's in France, it's always quite special for me. Everywhere, when he enters the court, it's difficult to be there only for finals, you know. And I haven't seen that many finals because of work. It's
right.
Every single time it's because of work or because of money. I've been quite lucky as well to go to Belgrade a couple of times, and many times now.
Before you go into that, die, so let me refresh.
Sure.
So I think we were talking about you going to Serbia for the Belgrade Open.
Yeah. Yeah, I went before that. That was the last time I went. I think the first time I decided to go was February 2019. I had a week off work because I'm, you know, as a teacher, I've got set holidays.
Right.
And I was like, oh, why not go to Belgrade, you know, like for a first time? And there was also another fan that I knew via the internet. I was like, you know, let's try and meet. We didn't manage to meet then, but...
A Serbian fan
still...
in Serbia, or is it someone...
Yeah. I mean,
okay.
As in, she was... I knew her from social media.
Oh,
and,
okay,
you know,
gotcha.
I had a good vibe about her. Because, you know, sometimes you meet... I've met a lot of people on social media, and you have... a whole wide range of people.
Sure.
98% of them extremely good, There's a 2% meh. But anyway, and I decided to go, and she couldn't make it to see me because she was outside of Belgrade for a couple of days because of uni, etc. Anyway, and she said, "Oh, you have to go to the tennis center and stuff." And I was hoping Novak would be at the tennis center when I would go, because I knew he was around in Belgrade, so I assumed he was going to go and practice. And actually, on that day, the people welcomed me so well, and they said, "Yeah, he's going to arrive at some point. Like, just wait for him." And then Novak was like, "Hey, what are you doing here?" And then, it was awesome. And then after that, I went back a year later, actually, just before COVID. I went back in February 2020, where that's also a funny story. So then I met that friend, Elena, in person. We met. And I love the Fortress Canemic dance. So we went there, we watched the sunset, and then we decided to take a cab to go to Novak's restaurant together, because, you know, that's the general headquarters, you know?
Right.
And we get out of the cab, and suddenly, she sees Novak, I see Yelena inside the restaurant, and we had no idea. Like, we literally had no idea, because the day before he was in Italy.
Right.
So I wasn't sure whether or not he was going to come back to Belgrade, but once again, it was my only time where I could go, because usually my other holidays, I go to tennis tournaments or to visit my family in France. And this was amazing, because I also had just had an operation to my hands. So I had my hand in a scarf or in a cast as well.
Yeah. Okay, cast.
Exactly. And Novak knew I had issues with my thumb, but he didn't know I was going to have the second operation. Of course, he didn't know. So I had just had the second operation. And I mean, I was fine, apart from the fact that I couldn't use my hand. But I remember the waiter said to us, he's going to come out now of that room, you know. So they were actually saying to all people, like, they were very kind. And Novak came out, but there was something stuck in the door. And then he saw me and he was like, "What did you do?" He saw my head. She's like, "Well, I just had my second operation, but I'm fine." And then he wanted to know all about it, because I had an arthroscopy. So I had, I don't want to go into too much details, but basically there was a camera in my ligament.
Right.
And I could watch the inside of my hand. So I was saying that to Novak. Exactly. That was Novak's reaction. And me, it was my opposite one. I was just like, "Oh, I loved it." I was like, "It's so cool. Like, who can say they watched the inside of their body, you know?"
Right.
And Novak said to me, "Oh, during my operation for the elbow, I couldn't, you know, watch anything, whatever." And me, I'm the opposite. I'm like, you know, show me.
Get more cameras. Why not?
Well, you know, like, who can say that they've seen the inside of the ligaments?
Not,
you know,
many
not
people.
A lot. Of,
not a
exactly.
Lot of
well, I can. And then he asked me, I remember that question where, it's not the first time he asked me, he said, "Are you busy tomorrow?" And I was like, "Well, let me check my calendar." He said, "Well, if you want to, you can come and watch my practice. I'd love to have you there." And I was like, "Yes, please." I will be there.
Right.
So I can't remember what time he told me to go, but and Elena was with me. So I said, "Can I have a plus one?" He said, "Of course, you can have a plus one. Bring your plus one." And then that's when I started watching his practice. And now it's quite, I can't believe I'm about to say that, but it's quite common grounds for me that when I go to Belgrade and he's around, that I go and watch his practices.
Right.
And it's always such an honor, because you don't have many people. And I remember that first time we went with Elena, it was a Sunday. And at some point we were eight people in the bubble. Eight
wow.
people. Like, there was Novak, his coach, and a physio. And
yes.
then there was, on the other side, the sparring partner, a coach, and the physio, and me and Elena.
Wow.
There was no one else.
It's like your own private showing.
It completely was. And we were literally, we had the chairs opposite them, but we were, like, the court was just there. You
right.
know, it's not, like, even when you're first row at Roland Garros or whatever, there's always, you know, a little gap because
yes.
of cameras, because of material. Here, no. It was amazing. So, yeah. And since then, I've been a couple of times. I mean, I went in December, so I went in February 2020, which was just before, like, February 2020, December 2020, when I brought him a little gift. And that's also when I met his part of his PR Serbian team, because they were there the same day.
Right.
And then I went in October 2021, which is when I played with him. And
yeah,
then
how,
I went...
how did that come about? Tell me about that. That's kind of cool. Yeah, we can't just brush over that part. What the hell?
Well, You know, I believe a lot in manifestation. I believe a lot in karma. I believe if you do good things come back to you. And I don't know, I just, when I packed my bag, I knew I was going to Belgrade and I knew it was going to be around. And I was assuming I was going to be able to watch this practice. I was like, let me pack my sports stuff. Like, right. You know, I just had a vibe. Okay.
You had a vibe.
I had a vibe. Interesting. I really had a vibe. I went on the Thursday. And on the Thursday, when I saw him, he had finished his practice. And I saw him in the center before even being in the thing. And I remember, he said, come to the practice the day after. And you're going to think I'm crazy. And people are going to think I'm crazy. But I promise you it's true. I woke up on a Friday morning, Friday the 22nd of October, right? 2021. I woke up. And I said to myself, today's a great day to play tennis with Novak Djokovic. I just...
Really?
So I got my sports stuff.
It's not that crazy. I mean, I believe it. Why wouldn't I believe that?
Because some people don't believe in manifestation and don't believe in destiny and don't believe in this kind of things. And I have a much more rational mind. Sure. And in a way, I am a rational person, but I also, you know, believe in that. Yeah. And I took I dressed up with my sports stuff. I had my trainers on. I even had my tennis shoes in my bag, just so you know, right. Which I didn't put them on. I had just trainers, and I was such, my hair is down most of the time. I had a thing, a hair, like I was so ready in my head. I had a hairband around my wrist to be able to just put my hair up in case I needed to. Wow. And I needed to.
That's dedication. That's preparation right there.
Yeah. And then at the end, so on that day there were, Victor Troicki, who was playing as the role of the coach, because Goran, I guess, was off. And there was Marco Panicki, his fitness trainer, Novak. And then there was a sparring partner who was quite, I believe, if I remember well, a young boy and his coach. Okay. And at some point, Novak said to that young boy, I'm done. But Novak kept on and on, and he worked on a few techniques. And on that day, I remember, usually when Novak does his practice, I'm out, as in I'm opposite him, but I'm not involved in the conversation. On that day, Novak was involved in the conversation. I remember Victor Troicki being like, where are you from again? And Novak was like, oh, she's a mix. I was like, I'm French, buddy. I've got the UK citizenship, but I'm not a mix.
Oh, my God.
But anyway, I felt like I was part of the team, to be honest. And at the end, we talked about, because that was the day that the Vienna draw was going to come out. And if Daniil Medvedev was part of the Vienna draw, that meant Novak could have potentially lost the number one spot and therefore finishing the year as number one as a record seventh time was in sort of danger.
Right.
And then at the end of the practice, Novak was like, Judy, come here. And he said, Judy, can you remind me? Because, you know, he was like, you're a super fan. So he was playing with me. He said, can you remind me how many weeks I've been number one? And after the US Open, I had taken a few weeks off social media. So usually I was doing the count every Monday with a GIF, you know, on Twitter.
Right.
So I was like, and I remember seeing the tweets of another lady who does stats and stuff, who's a mathematician, and her name is Yolita. And I remember seeing the amount of weeks guaranteed. And anyway, I was mixed up in my, and I was like, whoa, 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 whoa. I said, like, this is a dare. I said, what if I win? And what if you win? Like, what do we do? And he said, what do you want? And I said, if I win, I want to play tennis with you for 5 minutes. And he said, okay, sure. And I didn't ask what if. Actually, he said, what if you lose? I said, if I lose, I also play tennis. And he was like, not sure. But anyway, and I remember so well, like I gave a number, but I wasn't sure of it. And then we both went to Google. He Googled himself to see how many weeks he had. I went onto the Twitter of a girl called Christina, who also does it every Monday.
Right.
And I remember saying to her, like, oh, this girl, you know, she does it every Monday. Like, I trust her. And I got the number wrong. And I remember being like, oh, no, like, it's not. This was my only shot.
Right.
And then the three of us, so Marco, a physio from the center, and Victor Troicki, were sort of teasing me. We're like, oh, too bad, Judy. Too bad you're not playing with him. And then they said, all done, let us have a reunion, a meeting to decide whether or not we can change that. So the three of them, Novak was sat on his chair.
Just playing with your heart.
They were completely playing. And then they turned around, they were like, no, no. You know, in French, the no, no.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I remember looking at Novak being like, I was like, in my head, I was like, you're not gonna do that,
Like,
are
I've
you?
got the tennis shoes. Oh, wait, look, I brought the shoes.
Well, they were on the other side of the court, but then he stood up, picked up another racket in his bag, and I remember he said, come on, girl. And I was like, ah!
Yeah.
I gave my phone to Marco, and then I tied up my hair. I had the headband just here, ready to go. So I remember running to, because I had my coat on, because I was quite cold, and I dropped the coat, you being like, okay, ready, let's do it.
Yeah.
And then I think Novak was not really sure of my level.
Sure.
And I think both him and Marco, when they saw I could send it back across the net, they were like, okay, it's not going to be
right.
too much of help. But then Novak was trying to coach me in French, but I only realized that afterwards when watching the videos, because the echo was so big
right.
that I thought he was making small talk. And then actually, I'm a bit ashamed, but I'm not ashamed because, you know, I didn't. Novak was telling me off. He was like, we're not talking when we're playing. And he said, you know, watch your racket, like, you know. And then I was like, oh yeah, nice racket, because I had
oh
no idea what
God,
he was saying.
That's so good.
But that was fun, to be honest. And I didn't want to make it too long, so at some point when he was kind, because a couple of times I sent the ball away, and he was like, that's okay. And then he was chanting my name, as legs were like, allez Julie, allez Julie, allez Julie, which was so sweet, also doing it in French. And I asked him to serve at me. I said, I want you to serve properly at me. Do it.
Right.
You know, I was like, I want to see the speed of a ball when I'm in front of it. And I remember he was like pretending to like shake his bum and trying to make me laugh, you know. And then he did the first serve. I did post that part. He did the first serve and he ended up in the net.
And oh, yes, I remember that, yes.
It was not on purpose. I genuinely think he wanted to be nice with the serve,
right.
but then it was not strong enough.
Right.
And then the second time he served and I sent it back, and it's so funny because clearly Novak could destroy me in 1 second. And he was doing this sort of noise, he's like, when clearly he
right.
had no struggle sending back the balls that I was sending. So, and then I won that point. I mean,
yes, he got it out. He hit it.
Exactly.
Right.
So I said, let's stop there. I'm
yeah.
sticking to me. So overall, it
Your
was
record is
5 minutes.
Some of the best, like one of the best records against Novak on the planet. You
yeah.
got it.
And then Marco was giving me my phone back, and Novak was like, we record this. So then he was about to say something, but because I had won the point when Marco said to me, it's recording, I said, oh, so who's the goat now? And then again, after that, you know, he said, the goat is on your t-shirt. I was like, good that you admitted that it's you. And after that, I was like, thank you so much. You know, I put the racket back. I was like, okay.
Right.
You know, I did take a look at the racket because it was the golden racket they had then, you know, for the 311 weeks plus
right.
of being number one. And Novak said, oh, we have to play the tradition. I said, what? And in my head, I knew what the tradition was. And for me, being able to play that game with him, which is the game of the pétanque, you know, that he
yes.
plays with his team when you're behind the net and you like throw the ball and you have to be close to the baseline.
Close to the baseline, yeah.
The closest to the baseline is
right.
the winner. For me, that game is the, you know, the top of the top. Like, it's Team Djokovic playing that. So he said, oh, we have to play. And then I won.
Yeah, I saw that.
We tried to cheat, but I won. But overall, he just... Novak is, I find him very good, not only with me, but all fans, to the moment you talk to him, that he's making you feel very special. Like, he listens to you, he's a very good listener, you know, and he's, as I said, he has
patient,
that capacity.
Right? He has a patience
yeah.
to deal with everyone
yeah, yeah.
every day. It's like, it's a lot of people.
Yeah.
And yeah.
But he has that capacity at making you feel that, yeah, indeed, you are very special, you know?
Right.
And on that day, he gave me one of the most beautiful gifts, you know, because I know I've met Novak a lot, but in terms of time, like
yeah.
every single time I see Novak, the time is kind of conversation is kind of limited, and rightfully so, because, you know, he has so much
sure.
to do. I mean, things, that was when I played with him in October 21, where things shifted. But then when I saw him in February 2022, after Australia, in Belgrade as well, that was completely different. And then I had a lot of time with him, which was amazing. But that was, I think, the first proper time where I had, I don't know, 15, 20 minutes overall with him, you know, and Marco, and it was just so magical, you know,
right.
and once again, I repeat it, you know, I'm lucky, I'm privileged, etc. But on that day, it was extra, extra, extra special, you know? And for me, playing tennis with him was always, it is the thing that I think is the best thing ever, you know? And yeah, I was about to say he made it happen, but I'm tempted to say we made it happen because, you know, I
destiny.
Did force...
It was.
I think it was. And yeah. It was awesome. But I remember my legs, I could not see them shaking, but I could feel them shaking. Like I've never had this before. Like it's the same kind of feeling that I remember having stage fright before doing a show when I was 14 in school, like singing. It was the same kind of fear that I had. But yeah, it was really awesome. Yeah.
That's really cool. And then recently you got a racket from him at Wimbledon.
Yes.
How did that happen? That's really cool.
Well, it started with a conversation with his... So in Monaco this year, at some point, one of his agents, Eduardo, came to watch the practice next to me, which is uncommon because usually Eduardo goes on the court or doesn't go. And he came with me amongst the crowd. And at some point, Edo said something like, oh, Julie, you must have all of Novak's attire because over the years he must have given you everything, you know.
Right.
And I said, actually, when we talk about it... of course, once again, I'm super lucky, but I only have two hats and a wristband, you know, like in terms of attire. And he said, oh, you don't have a racket. I said, that's the one I would love to have, you know, because the rackets. And he said, why don't you ask him? I said, no, I don't ask. I was like, no. He said, I'll ask him for you. And I don't know what happened afterwards, but it didn't happen. But then... I remember Edo being like, you need to make Novak aware about this. Like, you need to just tell him. So I did at Wimbledon when I met him at some point. And Novak was like, really? I said, no, I don't have one. He was like, at the end of the tournament, you're having one. I'm promising that. I said, okay. And then he saw me. So on Sunday, so yeah, we were about to be kicked out of the grounds because usually we wait by a balcony where... the winner does interviews, but then they told us, oh, he's not going to make interviews. But then Novak hadn't crossed the bridge. So the bridge, usually the winner goes on the bridge of Wimbledon because it's good for photos and also because Novak has the habit of giving away clothes that he has signed. You know, like he's above all of us. So we're not, you know, he's throwing the clothes, you know.
Right.
And it was, I think, 10 to 8. And suddenly Novak finally crossed the bridge after, I don't know, 3 hours. So we all ran. And a few of us had flags, so we took out the flags, and I took out mine, and he saw me, and he was trying to shout at me, Elena, who's his other agent, and Elena was aware about Novak's promise, and then suddenly I'm waiting, I don't know, 30 seconds after that, and Edo, again, comes back on the balcony, or maybe a minute, and Edo is calling my name, but of course, there are loads of fans down there, and as soon as everybody saw Edo with the racket, everybody came close to under Edo.
Right.
So I said to Edo, like, if you do that, it's not me who's having it.
Right.
Like, even though you say this girl, like, you know. So we made a sign of walking down. So we walked down 10 meters and nobody followed me, to be honest, because it was not Novak, I don't know. Or nobody. So then I went and Edo threw it to me because I think they did it on purpose. If it had been Novak, everybody, like, rightfully so, would have, you know, gone and... I think he only had one to give, and he held his promise. You know, I respect him for that, and I'm honored. Really,
that's
I am.
So cool.
So yeah, and then I pretended I slept with it, which I did not. And now, since then, I'm receiving money offers.
Of course, yeah. Were you not expecting that?
That many? No.
Yeah, of course.
Honestly,
it's a Wimbledon, a winning racket signed by Joko.
I know, but. I mean, I'm surprised that people think I would say yes.
Yeah,
that's
crazy.
What I'm most surprised about.
You're gonna have to bury me with a racket.
I'm like, guys, it's not going in anyone's hands. I just might. Well, I did let a lot of people take photos with the racket because, you know, they ask very nicely.
It's not transitioning to someone else's hands and staying with them is what you're saying.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So yeah, that's super
cool.
Super, super cool.
You've reached the pinnacle of a Joko fan. I don't know if. I don't know what else there is. Olympics. Gold medal.
Well,
that's it. That's the last one.
For him, yes. I had saved so much money to go to Tokyo. I was like, I am going to Tokyo. At the same time, I'll go to Japan, you know, like I'm going to make a 3 weeks trip when I'm not only being a tourist, but sure. also, you know, going for the Olympic Games, and then COVID. And then 2021, they had no crowd. So I just couldn't go. And luckily, I got all of the money back because it was a lot of money because I had booked everything.
Right.
But it was pretty tough for me to accept that I wouldn't go and wouldn't watch him. Because London 2012, I literally didn't have the money. Rio de Janeiro 2016 was way too expensive for me, you know, to go across the world back then. And then Tokyo, I was like, okay, now it's the time. So Paris 2024.
I was going to say, if that's not destiny, I don't know what is. Like, that's perfect. Well,
you know, it's only in a, well, less than 2 years now. Well, two years, sorry.
Paris, yeah.
So let's hope.
Let's hope. I mean, thank you so much for your time. As a
no problem.
Diehard NOLA fan, these stories are pretty cool. And I mean, I don't know.
To be honest, I've always said it, but I'm going to write my own book one day because I have so many more stories and I have so many anecdotes of like witnessing Novak's greatness. And
we didn't even
not
talk about
him.
Your travels when you go to these places. You know, we didn't even talk about all the other stuff. This could be a 3-hour podcast. I mean,
it could be. But I definitely want to write a book because I just want to write it not for people to read it, but for me as a memory.
Sure.
You know, I want to put it into something, and one day, not now, because it takes time, and my adventures are not over.
Yes, of course. You know,
there are a few things. Hopefully, there's something I can say in public soon that I did. That's quite cool, but I can't say anything right now because I'm not the boss, so I can't say anything. But then I have a few other ideas of a few things that I do want to happen, and I think they will. So, you know,
beautiful.
We'll see.
I wish you all the best with that. And once again,
thank you so much
for your time.
No problem. Thank you for having me.